Welcome to Greetings from Maine,
the Spring 2026 edition.
I'm Jess Miller from Maine Public Radio.
And I'm Emily Duncan Wilson from Maine Public Classical. A few months ago, Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical teamed up to make a winter special, and we had so much fun that we decided to make a spring version.
Yes. While we technically just officially entered summer, we're going to pay our respects to spring because, one, we recorded some lovely stories we're excited to share, and two, surviving that time between winter and not winter is one of the most main things there is. And this year, I don't know about you, but I really felt that.
I used to really not like spring, and now I really like it.
What happened?
I don't know. I think while spring is kind of grubby, gritty, kind of cold and breezy, actually, spring does have a hopefulness to it. I mean, there's so much cooking within the trees and like cooking underground, and I know that it's coming back, and I think it feels really good.
Yeah, I think balancing those two things, that spring is both hopeful and also kind of brutal, that's what makes it a real roller coaster for so many of us. And that's what we're going to explore in this special. How spring flings us all into a gauntlet of change every single year. We're going to hear from people who are navigating hard and hopeful moments of change this spring. We'll meet a high school student who's falling in love with snowboarding right at the end of the season. We'll visit a farm during lambing season, which is a time of year when life and death can be really intertwined. We'll have some lighthearted moments, too, at a record store and in the break room right here at Maine Public. And finally, we'll roll up our sleeves with a group of friends who are working their way through some pretty big life and career transitions, all while tackling some spring cleaning.
I love it.
So whatever strategies you might have for shoulder season, we hope this spring edition of Greetings from Maine will help the time pass a little more pleasantly, or at least remind you that if you're feeling a bit of spring fever, you're in really good company. And we've already come a long way in just a few months.
I've had multiple people out here tell me that March is the worst month of the year.
We're going to kick things off with a parable from our very own parking lot at Maine Public. Maddie Smith is a reporter based here in our Portland office. She moved here from Seattle, where she says,
March is when you get like your first like 60 degree day. Like it's still mostly gray and rainy, but you have like one awesome like mid-March day where you're like wearing shorts and you're like, ah, we're almost there. But that is not March here. Like I am like wearing my puffy winter jacket through March, if not maybe into April a little bit. And that's tough.
Okay, here we are. We're walking into the kitchen here at Maine Public Radio, reporting live. Bill's making tea. Hello. Here at Maine Public Radio, you know, we covered the most pressing news across the entire state. What are we looking at here? And for a few weeks every spring, a lot of us also keep tabs on something extremely dumb.
All right, so it is a regular standard size piece of paper. It is taped to a stainless steel refrigerator.
This is Allison New. She works in our Portland office as our fearless administrative assistant.
At the top of the paper are mountains with the script that says, it's time to submit your guesses on when the 2026 marginal way snow pile will melt. So we have a very small parking lot, and every time it gets plowed, this huge pile accumulates in the corner.
This year, the marginal way snow pile got really big.
Part of me wanted to go up to, you know, where my skis were at and just try and ski down the massive snow pile.
This is Sam Tracy. We also work together at Maine Public.
I don't know. I know there's a lot of trash in there.
Yeah.
Honestly, maybe we just need a little sunshine, some vitamins. But in this gray stretch, something silly to focus on can really make a difference.
We currently have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 guesses.
I started reporting the saga of the snow pile in early March. Bill, you want in on this?
I already submitted the date of April 9th.
This is Bill Johnson, our local Here and Now host. And like his, the guesses were all over the map, or calendar, I guess.
This truly could melt. Maybe it could take until June. It could also melt like next month if we don't get snow.
You grew up in Maine, right, Sam?
Yep. Born and raised.
Yes. So when I moved here, things were starting to thaw that first winter. And my friend said, this is the fool's spring.
Oh, yeah. That's a shibboleth, if you will, for born and raised Mainers.
It's like an inside joke.
There's actually like seven seasons in Maine, not just four. So obviously there's winter. Then there's full spring. And then there's that late April snowstorm of second winter, basically. Then there's mud season. And that usually gets you through, like, you know, late April, early May. And then springtime, it only lasts like 2 weeks.
That is the beauty of the very unbeautiful snow pile. It's a way to measure with our own eyes that things are, in fact, changing. It's like scratching a mark into the dungeon wall.
I even used Sharpie. Everybody else used regular pens, so it really felt like particularly set in stone.
You locked it in.
It's like,
Maddie came to a decision. April 29th. This was mid-March.
The timing was pretty ironic, if you ask me.
The very same day that Maddie locked in her guess, she happened to look out the window.
And I was like, oh my gosh, they're actually taking it away.
We were starting to sort of, you know, count down the days until spring. And oh, by the way, that thing you measure, it's gone.
Our all-important snow pile disappeared.
But
luckily, or not luckily, depending on, I guess, your opinion on the guessing game and or snow,
a new snow pile emerged.
It was, I wouldn't say a rebirth, but
it is, in fact, there. And people have continued to put their guesses up. So I think we're just kind of like riding with the new snow pile and just hoping for the best, I guess.
Well, the one next to the dumpster has just a little bit of a different hue.
That's Bill Johnson again.
I think it should be
fine. There's also a porter potty next to the corner one.
Yeah, that's not great. Yeah. Just like Maddie, Bill had placed his bet on the first pile. I asked him how he felt when it disappeared.
Elated.
Really? Tell me why.
There was a big snow pile. It had turned a different color than the white snow, and it was gone. It was removed.
It is now June, and the snow pile is officially gone, for real this time. A winner was crowned on April 3rd, and it wasn't Bill. Bill's guess was off by almost a week. But through all the ups and downs, he remained a voice of calm and reason.
Do you have any more thoughts about the snow pile?
No.
Thank you for playing along. We appreciate it.
This is so much fun. What's next?
Okay, so next up,
it low-key feels warm out here.
We take a trip to catch the final few hours of Deering High School's ski club season.
The snow is melting, so it's like harder. Like usually it would just be like fluffy snow, but
yeah, it's kind of slippery.
Yeah, like it's getting like icy.
This is Zam Zam. I met her on a warmish day in March.
So I'm like out of breath right now. This like board is heavy.
This is Zam Zam's first year at ski club, and she did start on skis, but then just last week, she fell in love with snowboarding.
I lowkey wish I knew about snowboarding while I was a child, or like, had the option.
Equipment, lift passes, transportation, it's expensive, and the crowd tends to be white. Getting a chance to learn in high school along with other students of color feels good to Zam Zam, and also it's still really hard.
It's definitely humbling seeing like little kids that are like probably like 5 years old better than you, but honestly, I'm gonna keep rolling with it.
This was Zam Zam's second day ever on a snowboard, and she let me follow her around with my microphone. We walked over to a small hut where the mountain instructors were hanging out.
gotta see if they have a snowboard instructor. They might not.
She was hoping for one last lesson this year. A man comes out of the hut and says they don't have anyone to teach snowboarding today.
That's fine. Yeah, I'll just keep going down. Kind of. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Do you want to come down the hill with me?
I mean...
This is the part where I confess that I don't know how to snowboard or ski.
How slow do you go, or fast?
No, really slow.
Oh, do you think I could walk alongside you?
Yeah.
But I'm really good at cheering people on.
I can feel your determination. I think this is going to be great.
When we get to the top...
Sit down.
Zamzam needs to put on her board.
Really icy. I always start with my... left foot, so I feel like it's easier to put on. It's tight. Then we gotta flip over.
Woo! A few scoots and she's on her way.
Hey, I'm doing better!
Oh, you're looking great!
Stretch by stretch. She makes her way down the hill.
Yeah, my legs are like burning right now.
Yeah, you're working hard.
When she falls,
I feel like if I keep doing this, I'll be good. Just see if I can keep going.
She hops back up.
Ooh. Shaking.
And eventually...
How do you feel?
She does make it all the way to the bottom.
It doesn't hurt falling, which is really like a shock for me at first.
This is the first time she has tried to do this alone without an instructor helping her balance.
I fell like a million times, but it's kind of fun falling. Like if I fall, I just know I can get right back up, keep doing it again. So I'm just very proud of myself that I'm doing better than the first time, so. My two biggest fears are literally falling in heights. So hopefully by the end of today, I'll be good and not be afraid of falling in heights.
Yeah, you picked a sport with both of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely a work in process, like in progress, but.
A total win as far as life lessons go. Thank you to Zamzam and all the rest of the Deering High School Ski Club. Thanks so much.
Jess, I know we've bonded over our love of vinyl and records in the past, so when I heard that you went out to talk to people on Record Store Day this spring, I was so excited. How did it go?
Oh, it was great. I have just arrived in Brunswick to check out Record Store Day. One of my favorite signs of spring has nothing to do with weather. Happy Record Store Day. I forgot to lock the car. Let me do that. I headed up to Brunswick on a sunny Saturday. Oh, somebody is leaving with, like, you can see his arms buckling under the weight of how many records he's carrying, to visit one of my favorite places.
Welcome to the madness.
Oh my God.
So that's David. He owns Deep Groove Records.
How's it been today?
It's been wild since I got here.
One day a year in the spring, vinyl enthusiasts celebrate Record Store Day with events and new releases. Here, it was a scene.
What brought you out to Deep Groove today?
Perusing records.
There were DJs spinning vinyl, of course, and eager customers searching through stacks and stacks of records.
What kind of stuff were they finding?
We got the first recorded sounds.
Ooh, look at that.
Cool. It's a bunch of different, you know, Thomas Edison, the first telephone call, so that's kind of fun.
A couple named Alex and Tristan were at the dollar bins finding interesting stuff to put on their Victrola.
Tom Lehrer, we've got one of his albums. It's a musical comedian from like the 60s.
I wasn't expecting Tom Lehrer today, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, it's a good grab.
Nice.
I bumped into a man named Rick.
You looking for anything in particular?
No, just whatever catches my eye.
He had a cool vibe, leather jacket. I asked him who was on his t-shirt.
Pallbearer. They play a type of heavy metal called doom metal, which is loud and heavy, but also slow and sad. You can bang your head and cry at the same time.
Okay, I'm learning that metal can be slow. Yeah.
I love that.
Everyone's after something different. You might have one person who's coming for a Taylor Swift 7-inch, and that's all they're here for. Then you might have the jazz heads that are looking for really obscure stuff, and other people are outside digging through the dollar bins all day. So it's kind of beautiful because it just, it pulls everyone in.
So when I started flipping Sharon Jones naturally, I bought this record twice by accident. That's how much I love it. It didn't surprise me when Caleb, a Bowdoin senior...
You're in some digging yourself?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I'm here, right?
...struck up a conversation with me.
What are you looking for?
I mean, just stuff that looks cool.
We were both wrestling with various temptations, and we were both on a budget.
You want to go out to the bins with me? The dollar bins? We can see what we see? All right.
Caleb was on a particular mission.
Yeah, I think this is the day I start to get my record collection going. Yeah.
Why is now a good time to start your record collection?
I'm about to graduate, move into my own place. Want to curate immaculate vibes there. Requires a record player to do so, I think, too.
It's kind of a cool move if you have someone over, you pull out a record, yeah.
Yeah. But I think I want to get into, I want to get away from streaming and walking around listening to music and just have a record player and be more intentional and sit with the music that I'm listening to. So I might build a collection today. I might buy a turntable.
That's so exciting.
Caleb is really onto something there. I feel like when I choose to listen to a record, there's sort of a ritual to it. You know, you have to be really present with that piece of music. You have to pick it out. You have to hold it in your hand. You take it out of its sleeve. I often prop up the album so we can see the album art and read the liner notes. You have to slow down to really appreciate what's happening. It has this sort of cozy and nostalgic element to it. I feel like listening to records can really make a space feel like home.
Yeah, definitely. So, we've been talking to folks about how it feels to experience this annual period of warming and waking up.
And we've heard some compelling arguments that here in Maine, March may be the cruelest month.
Yeah, they might not be wrong. Whoever came up with In Like a Lion, Out Like a Lamb definitely did not live in Maine. But there is some truth to that saying because March actually does end with literal lambs here. And that's what we're going to hear about next.
All right. Awesome. Let's do it.
Our Maine Public Radio colleagues, Brenna Farrell and Jane Donahue, visited a farm in Elliott, Maine.
Oh, what a chilly day, huh?
Yeah,
chilly.
Yeah.
Where they learned that while spring can be joyful, it can also be sly and even kind of gruesome. But it depends a lot on how you look at it.
Yeah, so this is our seventh season with lambs. We're expecting about 15 this year.
Jane, that is Leslie Stevens, who you introduced me to.
Yes, I know Leslie because she's a friend of my mom's. She used to have a little sidewalk farm in Portsmouth, right across the New Hampshire border, which is where I grew up. And that was a very small operation. And so since moving to Maine, they've really expanded their farm.
And I'm so excited you reached out to her because I was obsessed with doing a story about lambs.
Yes.
This spring. So what made you think of Leslie?
Well, every spring on Surgeon Creek Farm, they have these lamb days where they open up the farm to the public and anyone can come into the barn and meet all of the baby lambs and their farm store is open. And so you kind of get to interact with the farm and see what it's like at that time of year with all the little lambs.
Okay, we're good. Okay, so this is our breeding schedule for 2025.
So unlike so many other parts of spring in Maine, lambing season is not just predictable.
And then we have our ram. This is our ram. Where did he go?
Oh, he's right there.
It's planned.
This is our ram. This is Woody. I want to be clear that he was named Woody before we knew he was going to be our ram.
Woodstock. Thank you.
And he wears birth control. He has an apron on, and that keeps him from breeding when we don't want him to.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like an actual garment.
Yes.
In October, they switch things up. They put a harness on him with a crayon on his belly. When they see a mark on a ewe's back, they jot down the date.
So based on the time that the ewe was marked, we count 145 days. So we know that mama has to be in the barn before the 12th of March.
There are about 10 days to go.
I know it doesn't feel like it, but this car has heat. It does have heat when it gets going.
This is Haley, who works with Leslie, and she gave us a ride over to meet the sheep.
So exciting! Good morning!
The sky was overcast. There was a snowstorm on the way.
Do you feel like spring is in the air?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, honestly.
9 degrees and there's snow on the ground. What's telling you it's spring?
The height of the sun, the brightness of the sun, the way the animals act, the way that the snow melts. It melts so quickly.
And maybe the best sign of all?
So when a sheep is excited, they don't run, they hop on all four legs.
Oh my goodness.
So sometimes you'll see them running around at dusk, actually, surprisingly, and they do the hoppy thing.
So, when did that start?
A couple weeks ago. Yep, I was out locking in chickens and doing my evening chores, and even the older ladies sometimes do the hoppy thing, and that's so cute. And to me, that's a sign of spring when they're running around and jumping and doing their hoppy thing.
Leslie loves sheep.
They're sweet, and they smell so good, the babies. Oh. They're adorable.
We headed into the kitchen to warm up by the wood stove, and Leslie immediately picked up a pair of knitting needles.
So I got a little bit addicted, and I started making baby hats.
Oh, wow. One,
so,
two, three.
So I kind of made, four, I might have a problem.
While we talked about the business of running the farm.
So the one I'm making right now is a little sheep.
Leslie's hands stayed busy.
Because we're opening on the 21st for Lamb Days, I've been trying to make some stuff for the store. You're constantly updating, upgrading. You know, that gate needs to be replaced. That fence is falling down. We need new electric wire fence. It's just constant.
Things break. They get fixed or replaced. Plants sprout and ripen and are harvested. I asked Leslie this clumsy question about whether it felt like everything was kind of always in a state of transforming into something else on the farm.
Well, you know what that reminds me of is compost. We have nice compost and we make a lot of it. And actually, we have been known to bury animals in it, which is what you're supposed to do. So you might notice in the barn there are a lot of skulls.
I did notice some skulls.
So those were friends. If we have an animal that we liked or we cared about or something, and or one that was buried in the compost, we tend to try and mark where they are and then find their skulls. Some of our cows, what we do with those is we put them in a metal dog crate and put them inside the compost and let the worms and everything eat the whole, you know, everything that's on it, and then we just keep the skull, the bone part. So it turns into compost here, and then it goes right back onto our gardens.
Leslie nodded at the room next door, where incubators sat on a table.
When you own a farm, life and death is part of it. What did I say? There's 100 eggs over there. Out of that 100 eggs, we'll probably have 75 chicks born. And of those 75, half will be roosters. How am I going to keep 75 roosters? They don't lay eggs. All they do is eat food. They don't do me any good. I already have the roosters that I want for breeding, so they don't do me any good. So that's a problem. So you kind of know that going in. And this kind of lifestyle is not for everybody, and I get that. But I do take offense to people who are upset that we have lambs that are going to be eaten.
It's one of the reasons Leslie likes to have people come visit the farm. She wants people to see and understand how it all works.
Knowing that those lambs are born for that purpose, taking them to the butcher is not my favorite day. It's definitely not my favorite day. But there's also a level of relief when they're gone because no more mouths to feed. I know that that's an income for the farm. And I know I've done my job. We had these lambs, we fed them, they look good, they're the right size, they're ready to go. I did my job and successfully got them to the butcher, and now they're ready to feed people.
few weeks later, Jane went back to the farm.
Yeah, it was a Saturday, late March, and I went with my mom and my dad and my friend Hannah. We went around 10, which is right when they kind of opened, and it was still pretty chilly. I think there was still maybe a little snow on the ground. But before we even got out of the car, you could hear all the chickens, and all the birds had a lot to say that morning.
And did you go straight to the lambs?
We did, yes.
Mom, my favorite.
What? It's this way to go to the sheep.
Oh my gosh, I'm Haley. Here. Sorry, how are you?
And Haley was down there.
We had lambs this morning at 3.
Wow. Can we see, can we come in?
Oh, come. So Caledonia's mom and Cucumber is her daughter. Little Cucumber.
They were really, really cute.
Oh my gosh, beautiful. Can we pass the baby?
Beautiful. Yeah. Mm.
What's up? Good boy. Do you want to be on the radio?
So right above the basement of the barn is their farm store.
Hello.
And so Leslie was up there running the store. And we asked her, you know, how has it been?
Do you want me to be honest?
Yeah.
It's been horrible.
Which was not what I expected based on what we saw down in the basement.
We lost a ewe and 4 babies so far. And it's never happened to us. And I'm hearing from lots of other families, lots of other farms, that it's been a horrible year.
Yeah. What's that?
Yeah. We know what happened. We don't know why. The ewe died from ketosis.
I remember when we went, Leslie said that ketosis is one of the things they're kind of always keeping an eye out for. So, like, oh, man.
Yeah, ketosis is a condition that can develop near the end of a pregnancy for a sheep. And there are a bunch of different risk factors, but it's basically when an ewe is burning through more energy than she's able to take in through food. And so it's something that is fairly common, and Leslie says they've dealt with in the past. And in the past, they have been able to curb it and bring the mama sheeps back to health. But it sounded like it was just really, really hard this year.
The two that are still here, the white one, she's had ketosis too, and we have been so aggressive, and we've turned it around, so she's on the upswing, and she's doing really well. But I don't know if her lambs are still viable. She's actually been induced. We induced her 2 days ago, and nothing. So when this is over, hi guys! I'll be texting the vet and saying, okay, nothing is happening. What do you want to do?
And that wasn't even the end of it.
The big one who had the single, the very first one, she was like a week plus early, and 2 of hers didn't survive. And I think it was because one of them died, I think, because her lungs weren't developed enough. But we don't know. You know, I was by myself. It was 1:30 in the morning. Like, did the best, you know, that I knew how. And so it's been really hard.
I imagine it's hard to have this open to the public experience and know that people are really only seeing the easy part of it and the cute part. You know, sometimes that process can be really hard and really sad as well.
The thing about living on a farm,
lambing season is almost over,
is that there's always a new season on the way.
And then we have chick sale. and you know, lots of events and stuff. But
yeah.
It's part of what Leslie loves about this life.
I just love change. Change is not always an easy thing, but I just love the change.
We have one last story to share with you, and it's one that I think a lot of us can probably relate to. Emily, tell me, what's your relationship to spring cleaning?
I love spring cleaning. I love a tidy home. I also love thrifting, which is a hard balance because then we get more stuff.
Okay, so that's actually a great segue into this last piece. It's a story about three friends who are just doing some spring cleaning, but it's also a deeper look at how important it is to tune into signals about what's working in your life and also what isn't. This story starts in a basement.
This place is completely different than it was.
Yay, I'm glad that you say that.
Well, in this corner,
where Pilar and Tobin are working with their friend Hannah.
Pilar.
Yes.
Do you know what this box is? It's at least one pufferfish.
Oh. Uh-oh.
This is Pilar.
So we bought this house 4 or 5 years ago, and I feel like we haven't moved in yet.
Pilar is an artist who sees potential in almost every material.
Pilar would live in Pee-wee's Playhouse if there was like a daily duster and a maid. Like,
yeah,
that's Pilar's aesthetic.
That would be, yeah.
Tobin is a director at a Unitarian Universalist church, and he's more of a minimalist.
Like, I have a really hard time when there's like little piles of stuff on things. It's not that it like looks messy, although that, but it just makes me a little bit anxious.
Now that he and Pilar are building a home together,
I'm trying to accumulate my own stuff and decide like, whoa, what is worth keeping and what to let go of.
And that starts in the basement.
Oh my God, your Blockbuster membership card. Hell yes. This is from 2007.
Oh my God,
it's your dad's Blockbuster card.
You should turn those into like Christmas ornaments.
Tobin and Pilar are some of Hannah's oldest friends and newest clients.
I've been taking some jobs as a professional organizer.
Hannah's always been that person whose space feels put together.
I know how to make spaces work. Ever since I was a kid, I had the eye to design things so that I would have space for people to come and gather and be together. It doesn't have to be fancy or expensive, but there are ways to make spaces calm and inviting.
When we first started talking about doing this with Hannah, I was like, I don't know if it's more scary with a friend or less scary with a friend. It feels so vulnerable to like be like, yep, I am a trash monster secretly. I've been like hoarding plastic bags in the bottom of our house.
That's me. You're the boxes.
Yeah.
Keep it straight.
Perfectly good boxes.
Back in the basement, three friends open boxes and drawers, sorting through memories and stories as they went.
Tobin, how do you feel about our gallon of maple?
Oh my God, that was one of the things I knew we were destined for one another when I saw that.
Tell me, what is that?
My father gave us a gallon of maple syrup, 128 full ounces, and said it was for Tobin and I to split. I think it was his first gift to us as a couple. And so I split it down the middle and I put the dotted line, Tobin's half and my half, which is, it's like vertical, so it's not possible.
Which is why I love it so much.
Oh, and the ghost of Momo.
Yeah. Hannah caught a glass shelf from a huge hutch that belonged to Tobin's mother, Momo.
I never asked you about Momo. Can I, or is this...
You can ask me about Momo.
Yeah, is that all right?
Okay. My mom was a creative, silly, wonderful, sensitive, wild woman. She died when I was 21. So she's been out of my life for longer than she was in it. And in 1996 or 1995, whatever, like, this was an expensive piece of whatever. So my dad held on to it for a really long time until he just didn't anymore. So I wasn't ready to let it go.
Momo's personality still looms large.
Yeah, Momo wouldn't like that is what I say when I'm like, I don't want that. Momo would not approve. She was a character. She would like get an idea, like stenciling pineapples onto the stair. So, you know, like as you were going up the stairs, or like she made a, God bless her. She made a scene on our radiator, and she like painted, it was like snowy and beautiful, and then she put apple trees. I was like, what are you doing? Apple trees don't grow in the snow. But yeah, she was a character.
Momo's likes and dislikes live on in little rituals.
There was like never a Campbell's soup casserole recipe that she met that she wouldn't try.
Every year on when Momo, on the anniversary of Momo's death, I send Tobin a Campbell's soup like gif.
Yep. A couple of years ago, I was really kind of feeling it, and Pilar made a bunch of casseroles. Pretty cute. Yeah.
The hutch is heavy. It doesn't really fit into Pilar and Tobin's life, but it has a lot of feelings attached to it. Hannah understands its weight and can see its possibilities. They dust the shelves. They start stacking the hutch with Pilar's quilting supplies.
And now this is like a nice tribute to it, because she would have she would have had a bunch of half-finished projects in here.
This kind of bulky, complicated item starts to feel a little bit lighter.
The first time you came in, the language that you used was like, let's get the energy flowing. I was like, okay, woo-woo. Like, we're just cleaning up boxes in the basement. Come on now. But it actually was like, oh, like, we could see from one side of the basement all the way to the other side of the basement. There was a clear path, and there was just like a lift.
Back at Hannah's house, I ask if balancing all these emotions and decisions ever gets complicated.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't, but it could, I think. I wouldn't have been able to do this job even 5 years ago, because I don't think I could have, especially with friends, but to separate my own intentions from what other people want. And our stuff, our spaces, like allowing someone into your house, that's very intimate, especially down into like the basements or the closets where the boxes with the history lie.
For many of us, spring cleaning is a time of reckoning, making decisions about how we want our homes to be, how we want our lives to be. Hannah knows firsthand how powerful this can be.
I mean, I really believe that changing spaces can drastically improve your life and give you peace and some freedom.
This is why Hannah is doing this work. About a month ago, Hannah made a change that had been a long time coming.
I left my job. I really left my last career, which I had worked in for a little bit over a decade, working as an architectural designer at an engineering firm. It took a long time to leave that job. It was really important to me for a long time, and it provided a lot of stability and security, which I really needed. But fear really kept me hanging on. And I had great colleagues, and there was nothing wrong with that career at all, but it wasn't a good fit anymore. I had top surgery when I was 43. So I've been on like a long, slow journey of growing into the person that I actually am instead of trying to fit a different mold. And in every one of those small steps, it has allowed more space for being more authentic in the world. It just is allowing me to believe that there is more for me than showing up somewhere and sitting at a desk.
What a big time of change for you.
Big time of change. Sometimes I'm like, who is this person? I started gardening, cut flower gardening. I started quilting. I like really have been leaning into middle age in this lovely, lovely way. So, I mean, I think it's great, but also my 20-year-old self would have totally made fun of this person.
But I also think they'd feel right at home because Hannah's created a place where there's room to grow. While we were wrapping up, Hannah told me something about gardening. that early February and March can be really hard months for indoor plants here in Maine.
They've had a long, dark winter, and they get glimpses of, like, strong sun, and they want to send off all their shoots, but it's not quite time yet.
Knowing when it's time to go for it and to send yourself out into the world, that's part of the gamble and the suspense we all weather, especially in spring, especially this year for Hannah.
It does feel a little bit like I was gathering strength at my old job, and I was paying off debts, and I was getting more clarity on who I am and what's important to me. And now, I don't know, it's time to try something new. And I have all the energy stored that I needed to sort of break out and trust that I'm going to figure it out.
Tending to our needs takes courage, and sometimes even small changes like repotting a plant or decluttering a space can lead to some very big progress.
I've spent a lot of time afraid, and I'm a lot less afraid than I used to be.
Emily, thanks for joining me here on Greetings from Maine.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks to all our listeners.
I'm Emily Duncan Wilson from Maine Public Classical.
And I'm Jess Miller from Maine Public Radio. To hear more stories like these, go to mainepublic.org/storytelling. Greetings from Maine is produced by Brenna Farrell, Jane Donahue, and me, Jess Miller. Our executive producer is Susan Tran.